Hey, hey, this is Cedric, your host of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast, and I want to wish all of you a Happy New Year and Bitcoin Genesis Block Day. Today's special episode is with Phil Champagne, the author of the Book of Satoshi, the collective writings of Satoshi Nakamoto. But first, I want to tell you about our amazing sponsors. First up, new sponsor, Citadel Cabins. Citadel Cabins is in the custom building industry, and they are famous for small log cabins that can be shipped anywhere and easily assembled in just a few days without any specialized skills or power tools required. All of our lives and needs have changed between working from home, lockdowns, mandates, and you might want a place to escape, retreat, or even an extra room at the house. Citadel Cabins exists to help individuals achieve shelter, rest, security, and location independence. As we descend deeper and deeper into clown world, the cabins are creating a way for families to escape and establish KYC-free location sovereignty, surrounded by people who care about freedom as much as we do. Or maybe you want to get off the grid completely. If you are a landowner, investor, renter, or you want to provide support via your labor or expertise, Citadel Cabins has a program that's right for you. Citadel Cabins has partnered with Untapped Growth, and for each cabin sold, they donate a portion towards their efforts in regenerative agriculture, Citadel community building, and beef production. Head over to Citadel Cabins for more information and to fill out an application now. Next up, new sponsor, CipherSafe. You bought a hardware wallet, right? Right, guys? So you take your Bitcoin security seriously. Now go that extra step and secure it from physical disaster with a CipherWheel seed storage device. Designed, engineered, and manufactured all in-house. Machined from solid stainless steel, not stamped out. Waterproof, fireproof, rustproof, Cedric-proof even. The CipherWheel is designed to be physically locked with a padlock and comes with a tamper evidence seal, so you can be aware of any attempts to steal your seed words. Go to CipherSafe.io to purchase your CipherWheel and keep your sats safe. And remember to use the code MATRIX for 10% off your order. Ledin offers interest-bearing savings accounts and Bitcoin-backed loans with the best rates in the entire industry, enabling users to access dollars or additional Bitcoin without needing to sell your existing holdings. Listeners of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast can get a free $50 in USDC when you become a Ledin user and take out a Ledin loan using our link. To learn more, sign up at start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. Bitcoin 2022, the Bitcoin Conference, will be held on Miami Beach from April 6th to 9th, and you can use code BITCOINMATRIX at checkout to get 10% off. All tickets are transferable and 100% refundable if you are unable to travel due to COVID restrictions. Going to the Bitcoin Conference will change your life. It's an investment in yourself, and it will help you stack more sats if you do it right. So if you haven't secured your tickets, use the code BITCOINMATRIX for 10% off at b.tc/conference. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with Phil Champagne for this enlightening conversation about the early days of Bitcoin, from Satoshi's very first post all the way to his last alleged private correspondence with Gavin Andreessen.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Phil Champagne is managing director of Ren Investments Group, a firm that invests in real estate with equity funding from financial partners. His knowledge of the Austrian School of Economics enables Ren Investments to navigate investments from a sound money perspective. Phil has a background in computer software with a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. Phil became interested in Bitcoin in 2012. Phil Champagne, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix. How are you?
Well, doing well, thank you. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I just finished reading the Book of Satoshi, which, forgive me, I should have included in the intro as well. The author of the Book of Satoshi, the collected writings of Bitcoin creator Satoshi Nakamoto. I just finished the book, and it's really, really a force of a compendium of knowledge and insight into how not just Satoshi was thinking, but other people were thinking.
Yeah.
And one of the things, I mean, just really kind of getting into a little bit there is I really enjoyed just the early writings, even before Bitcoin was released, the questions and sort of the different takes on things very early on.
Just before January 2009. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you wrote the book probably in 2013.
Correct. It started in 2013 to 2014. Yeah. Early 2014 was published.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, I think in a way, like, I think more people would know this book if it was published in like 2017 or in 2020.
Yeah, understand. Yeah, because it was, yeah, that's the angle. I've just posted actually today on Twitter a photo, an image of my wife and I at the CryptoLina event in Raleigh in 2014, August 2014, where we had a banner that says a future history book.
Yeah.
Because, you know, is exactly if you start writing a history book about World War II and you're 1946, 1947, it's actually more an event. It's fresh news almost, you know, it's just we still have people coming up and still, you know, their wounds are fresh almost, you know. And that was almost how people felt in 2014. Well, it's, I mean, newcomers will look at it and will be interested just like I was. But it was still sort of a news, and I could understand that in the 2020s, this will flip over and that will become a history book. But I wanted to, right up front, I saw that there was already a need for this, because I just was wondering, the story is just when I learned, wow, this guy just was there for the first 2 years and vanished. Just that itself is a very amazing story. Imagine Henry Ford. Nobody, if we knew, we didn't know who Henry Ford was, or Faraday, or pick one of the major inventor of the 1800s or 1900s or 20th. It will be just amazing to have this window of time where he's peace. And that's the reason why there's an analogy to religious analogy with the book of Satoshi, you know, that was the premise. But indeed, I think you have a point.
Yeah. And I mean, the book is very popular. I posted on it on Twitter the other day, and I got fantastic reaction from it. People were commenting on it. I just think that it would be even more popular if it came out now. I think there's sort of a tendency for people to kind of latch on to the newest thing and not dig as deep into the crates. But I love that you kind of noticed it was a future history book from the start. And so I'd kind of like to, I mean, you learned about Bitcoin in 2012. You're writing about it in 2013. Satoshi disappears around this time at some point. And
2010, yeah.
2010, sorry. But kind of reappears a couple of times. Maybe that's why I got...
Yeah, just once.
I think once with Dorian.
Yeah.
And then once with Bitcoin XT. And we'll get into that a little bit. But maybe...
That was later maybe.
Yeah, and maybe that one's a little bit more alleged.
Because I was finishing writing.
Yeah.
When there is like, okay, wow, he's got a new one here. But I decided to just insert it in the chapter 2. And because there's already some, instead of creating a chapter just for that, and I decided it's like, okay, I'm just going to put it up there as a live story within the chapter 2 of what was going on at the time to set the stage for the rest, because it was very, very short lived. You know, I'm not Dorian Nakamoto.
Right. Well, that was the timing around that was very interesting, because around the time he says, I'm not Dorian, Hal Finney happens to be alive at that point, I believe. Mm-hmm. And later on, when he jumps on, I think, one of the forums to discuss Bitcoin XT, I think at that point, Hal Finney had passed away. Which I thought was also very interesting with the timing.
Yeah.
So how did you come across Bitcoin? What did you think initially? And I mean, it seems like you went down pretty deep down the rabbit hole right away to learn about all this stuff.
Yeah. So I come from a gold silver background. I mean, in real estate, obviously. I mean, real estate was my first thing into the opening of, from my background is actually software engineering. So it's nothing with finance, you know. So I started reading The Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and got interest in real estate. And then at some point in 2007, I think, was books about gold. And I said, I don't get gold. It doesn't bring anything, doesn't bring in interest, doesn't bring dividends, doesn't bring rents, and that had to wrap my head around that concept, understand, and then understand, okay, yeah, it makes sense, gold and silver, when you have cycles of central banking cycles, like we had in the 70s, when we have high inflation, then all those dividend paying stocks or the interest payment or even real estate are having a hard time catching up to inflation at some point. And that was similar to the 70s. So actually gold was going up because suddenly people were totally afraid of the dollar dying. And so that concept, you know, when you understand, and now we're at that critical junction right now, I mean, we're going to get that 70s on steroids. Makes things even more important to understand, but even more when we think that this might be the last thing for the dollar, and after that we'll open the door for, well, something like a Bitcoin standard, and some might think it's a gold or a combination of gold and Bitcoin. But likely, with an electronic will, Bitcoin will have way more importance than gold, very likely. But so that was 2007. I started reading those books. And just like you mentioned, you know, I was reading one book about an author about gold, and then another book. And one was from Ron Paul, The Case for Gold. And now it's totally understood. Okay, it gives me all the parameters that everybody who reads those books, like a Bitcoin standard and all that today, they'll get pretty much all that formation. I was getting it from the gold bugs, basically the gold perspective. And so that's why that information I wrote in the book is an adaptation of this mindset, but then applied to Bitcoin, you know. And so the 2012, summer 2012, I think it's where my cousin, I had a 30 seconds conversation with him. I was out the door, so I had to leave him, something like that. And he says, have you heard about Bitcoin? And I said, no. And so I thought about you because I know you're in gold and silver, and this is a internet money. And I said, internet money? What? Forget it. And no, I don't have that time for this. I need to leave. And no, you should look at it. And anyway, I hang up and I have to go. And I just missed it. And the reason is I thought it was just, you know, there was no 21 million fixation, or even if it was, you know, I mean, you just get a 30 second window of time like that. I mean, you're going to dismiss. I thought it was more like paper writing, you know, equivalent of a community currency or a local village kind of thing, you know, but on the internet, you know. But then I came across again another source talking about that. And I said, okay, let's look at it a little bit more, and started to read. And I said, I'm going to read the white paper. And so I decided to read the white paper, and I said, wow, okay. And then I said, what else did this guy wrote about? And so I started looking at the forums, but then it was pong, ping pong, looking at the forums here and there, left and right. And then I hear, it's like, this guy is gone in 2010. He started in 2009, 2008. Two-year window, and for the last 2 years, he's not been active anymore. That's just intriguing. I want to know more what he wrote. And just knowing that, you know, that the only thing we know about him. I mean, this book would not have been written if he was still around. Even if it was a spokesman on person like Linus Torvald. If Linus Torvald had done the same thing as Satoshi Nakamoto, being a figure undercover for 3 years, you build a kernel and then he's gone. There would have been something of an interesting thing. Let's grab up what the Linus Torvald wrote about, you know, the inventor, the creator of Linux kernel. But so there was a parallel, but obviously here we talking about something even more important. You know, you're talking about revolutionizing a revolution on the money and central banking and displacement of big guns, you know. And so that was another factor that was making things really interesting. I really want to know a little bit more about this guy. And I started reading, and it was like, it's an elegant guy. And so I said, obviously there's other people that will be interested to know. So I'll grab up and start to grab all of this together and assemble that. And then from there, actually making it an actual book. I understand the Kindle stuff, and there's a bunch of things where I'm going to use a Kindle, but sometimes, and even for books that are somewhat of importance, I prefer a soft cover or hardcover. Actual paper book. And I thought this will be the kind of subject, the situation where it will be valuable to have it in paper. So I look into creating that book from there, and that's how it went there.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, especially to have the foresight, I think even at this point, that Bitcoin's gonna be long lasting, that we're gonna document, you're gonna document these collected writings. Before we get really deep into the book, where does the cover image come from? Why did you select it for the cover?
I have to thank my wife for that. I told him, we need a cover, and I have no idea where to go. But I think it will be great if we pick an image, an image on the internet, that will be no copyright, something like that. And where there'll be essentially the essential message will be decentralization, multiple people involved, and that kind of mentality and a concept. And she grows around and for 2 or 3 hours and comes up and, I think I found something for you. And then these are what you found, an image of in South America, in Argentina. I said, 10,000 years ago, and over several decades, or centuries. And I said, I think that's it. I mean, that's a good, people have put their hands into that. And the same thing with the code. I mean, it's not just Satoshi, it's actually several other people who are involved with that.
Yeah. Yeah, the cover is beautiful. And I also really agree with you about the Kindle versus soft cover and the hardcover. I have the book right here. I kind of do all my research now with the real book. I think the reading experience is better for me. I can take notes a lot easier. But I enjoy the experience more. And I think a book like this, in terms of what we're documenting here, I think it's nice to have in your hands, these writings. I think it just, I'd love to read Satoshi's first post on the crypto mailing list. Saturday, November 1st, 2008. I've been working on a new electronic cash system that's fully peer-to-peer with no trusted third party. The paper is available at this website. The main properties: double spending is prevented with a peer-to-peer network. No mint or other trusted parties. Participants can be anonymous. New coins are made from Hashcash style proof of work. The proof of work for new coin generation also powers the network to prevent double spending. Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system, abstract, a purely peer-to-peer version of electronic cash, would allow online payments to be sent directly from one party to another without the burdens of going through a financial institution. Digital signatures provide part of the solution, but the main benefits are lost if a trusted party is still required to prevent double spending. We propose a solution to the double spending problem using a peer-to-peer network. The network timestamps transactions by hashing them into an ongoing chain of hash-based proof of work, forming a record that cannot be changed without redoing the proof of work. The longest chain not only serves as proof of the sequence of events witnessed, but proof that it came from the largest pool of CPU power. As long as honest nodes control the most CPU power on the network, they can generate the longest chain and outpace any attackers. The network itself requires minimal structure. Messages are broadcasted on a best effort basis, and nodes can leave and rejoin the network at will, accepting the longest proof of work chain as proof of what happened while they were gone. Satoshi Nakamoto. I mean, it's really clear, well-written, and it all seems to be there. What did you think of the word we propose?
Yeah, yeah, it's funny, You've got the we there and implying, okay, he's not alone. Either, but I don't know. And what I found interesting is that, well, at least I didn't see anyone asking. I know that he never answered that question if someone asked him. But the question I'm wondering is if someone asked him, who else other than you has been working on it? Any kind of personal question, I've never been addressing those, you know, because I've never seen any reply that he's done on that subject.
But it all seems to be there as well in terms of designing for scalability, thinking about the 51% attack, distribution. Mm-hmm. And as we'll get into a little bit more of the writing, I mean, he's already thought about orphan blocks, escrow, multi-sig at this point, the difficulty adjustment. Yeah. And he gets into a little bit about centrally controlled networks versus peer-to-peer networks. Only, I guess, 6 days later, when someone wrote to him, I think it was, I'm not sure who wrote it to him, but someone said, you will not find a solution to political problems in cryptography. I thought that was really interesting. He said, yes, but we can win a major battle in the arms race and gain a new territory of freedom for several years. Governments are good at cutting off the heads of centrally controlled networks like Napster, but pure P2P networks like Nutella and Tor seem to be holding their own. Satoshi. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like Bitcoin's already political 6 days in.
The thing is, these people have seen a lot. They've been veteran fighters in this movement. They've seen a lot. They were involved, and they've seen, they were already, when I'm talking about these veterans, I'm talking about the people in the cyberpunk. They were fighting for all this silly thing about the encryption prevention of the United States to export products with encryption in it and all that. It's like, so that's why you, one of those was a t-shirt with the code for encryption is that this t-shirt cannot be exported, you know?
Right.
Absolutely. Absurd, you know, when you're talking about the code can be recompiled, programmed elsewhere, it's ridiculous. But they were totally aware of all the things that have happened in the 90s and early 2000. So it's funny to see, it's not new for them.
Yeah, 6 days in, the thoughts and the inquiries are all very interesting. Yeah. I did thought it was a little bit defeatist. And it seems to me like by the original poster who's asking the question, for someone who's been around as long as I think cryptography had already solved some issues before that. And obviously I think it solves right now already the political issue around debasement of money.
Yeah, but it was the decentralized aspect that was never really tackled.
Right.
And it's Bitcoin that comes up with that. So
it's hard to see it
other than Tor, obviously
And then in another post, which you call out as one of the most interesting posts made by Satoshi.
Which page?
468. This one, so now we're only another 6 days have gone by and we've already solved the Byzantine general's problem. Uh-huh. The proof of work chain is a solution. This is written by Satoshi 6 days later on November 13th. The proof of work chain is a solution to the Byzantine general's problem. I'll try to rephrase it in that context. A number of Byzantine generals each have a computer and want to attack the king's Wi-Fi by brute forcing the password, which they've learned is a certain number of characters in length. Once they stimulate the network to generate a packet, they must crack the password within a limited time to break in and erase the logs. Otherwise, they will be discovered and get in trouble. They only have enough CPU power to crack it fast enough if a majority of them attack at the same time. Mm-hmm. They don't particularly care when the attack will be, just that they all agree. It has been decided that anyone who feels like it will announce a time, and whatever time is heard first will be the official attack time. The problem is that the network is not instantaneous. And if two generals announce different attack times at close to the same time, some may hear one first and others hear the other first. They use a proof of work chain to solve the problem. Once each general receives whatever attack time he hears first, he sets his computer to solve an extremely difficult proof of work problem that includes the attack time in its hash. The proof of work is so difficult, it's expected to take 10 minutes of them all working at once before one of them finds a solution. Once one of the generals finds a proof of work, he broadcasts it to the network, and everyone changes their current proof of work computation to include that proof of work in the hash they're working on. If anyone was working on a different attack time, they would switch to this one because its proof of work chain is now longer. After 2 hours, one attack time should be hashed by a chain of 12 proofs of work. Every general, just by verifying the difficulty of the proof of work chain, can estimate how much parallel CPU power per hour was expended on it and see that it must have required the majority of the computers to produce that much proof of work in the allotted time. They had to all have seen it because the proof of work is proof that they worked on it. If the CPU power exhibited by the proof of work chain is sufficient to crack the password, they can safely attack at the agreed time. The proof of work chain has out all the synchronization, distributed database, and global view problems you've asked about are solved. Wow. You know, yeah pretty impressive. What do you think at this point, especially with your computer software background and electrical engineering?
And it was networking on top of that, but it was not in academic, it was more like working for Cisco Systems and that kind of thing. So I actually was not aware of the Byzantine generals' problem in networking, strangely as it might sound. And so I was just aware of it with this, and it made me laugh to realize it was mentioned as a unsolvable problem before, and that here it comes with a way to solve that. That was just amazing. This is, to me, it's one of the most interesting, and the other one is about the gray metal that you're probably going to cover later on.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I flagged that one, but I probably did, because that one is super interesting as well, and it's a great comparison. I'm going to bring that up because he gets into how we'll get to it when we get to it. Another one that's very interesting is, I think, a response to Hal one day later on November 14th, 2008. And again, we kind of get political. Satoshi writes in response to one of Hal's inquiries, "In the case, it seems to me that simple altruism can suffice to keep the network running properly. It's very attractive to the libertarian viewpoint if we can explain it properly. I'm better with code than with words, though." Again, we get political. I'm thinking at this point that he's really good with words.
That is the thing. Many people thought that every time he wrote, it was relatively concise to the point. And that is funny that he's saying something like that, you know.
Yeah. And again, we're getting kind of political again. And I think right away, Satoshi's nodding to sort of political notions, at least trying to solve maybe political problems. It's hard for me to talk about, not hard, but like, I think of Bitcoin as apolitical. And being a tool that helps remove me or from a lot of, I wouldn't say political life. I think life is political, but from the political structure, institutions of our current day government. But it is a political tool against that, I think, system as well. Even if you don't know you're using it for that reason.
It depends on, depend on someone's perspective, in my view, I wish the world was not political, and for this to not be political will require that there's no politics, and for it to be no politics, that means there's no election, there's no governments, everything's private. Will be what the point of the anarcho-capitalists are talking about. Maybe in 1,000 years we'll be evolved to a higher IQ or something like that, and I'll be able to realize that we don't need a government, everything can be private, and you'll vote with your dollar every day instead of every 4 years. You'll vote for someone who's got a monopoly for the next term. So that is, with that perspective, obviously, the fact the more the government is bigger, the more everything becomes political. The government is implied in science, or in global warming stuff, or the studies, and they finance global warming, or they finance any kind of study, or they finance, then that subject of it becomes political. You've got always, and obviously the government has been involved with the creation of money since 1913 in the United States, and therefore central banking is political and dollars political. While it wasn't much, there was nothing to talk about in the 1800s, you know, it was just dollar was gold, and gold is just a boring metal, and you could carry it in your hands, and that's it. So it was just a matter of taxing. There was a political aspect of it, but the money itself was not.
Right. Yeah, I think those are great points. I really long and wish for the separation of money and state. I do wonder, even in private citadels, I think there'll be potential for politics in the private citadels, even if it's what day of the week we should get garbage picked up on. There'll be preferences, and but yeah, I really would love to see politics removed from most of life, and sort of the elimination of government, or the things I think you made great points. About 3 days later, in response to James A. Donald,
what page?
This is now 87. Satoshi writes, "I believe I've worked through all those little details over the last year and a half while coding it, and there were a lot of them. Mm-hmm. The functional details are not covered in the paper, but the source code is coming soon. I sent you the main files. Available by request at the moment, full release soon, Satoshi Nakamoto." Mm-hmm. So we're getting closer to release. And I think this is where he seems to be struggling over communicating everything that's in the code. Mm-hmm. With your background, do you think he started coding this only a year and a half? Do you think... I'll stop there.
It's difficult to say. I mean, this is plausible, very like plausible. I mean, you're talking about, okay, general concept, and then you need to code. And I mean, he had the GUI interface on top of that, you know, other than just the daemon machines in the back. You know, I mean, there's a multiple bullet points to take care of. So I would not be surprised. It's a year and a half. I think it's totally legit. But on that, after that, you need to add that to a testing. Now, the question is, if it's a we as in just himself, the we was just a singular.
Yep.
Obviously, a single guy doing this a year and a half. Yeah, definitely would need to be probably a year and a half. Yeah.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot of things of moving parts to handle. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I think we'll get into a little bit, but yeah, I wonder how much of it was, I mean, or how long and how much work he had to put into design as well. And I think he touches on that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was probably more important, but he kind of intimates that he's thought through sort of a lot of variables, iterations, sort of, you know, again, like not just sort of all transaction types. He has to bake it into the core. And
the important, that means that a year and a half means it's the beginning of somewhere in the beginning of 2007. So we're not even, we're just starting to see the impact of the 2007-2008 crash. You know, the tremors were starting at that time.
Right. Yep.
And I'm not sure if it's actually that gave him I believe it's that, you know, it might be some other reason that came up to him as the reasoning for, okay, I got the idea, I'm going to start writing it. It's just curious that it also happens to be right at the moment. It was not at the moment that the crash was happening. He started right in during the tremors. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of things there. I mean, at this point in the story, I think it's Hal Finney with his prior work experience coming into sort of this wanting to solve this problem, or amongst the group of people who were the last pioneers to try to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. He has the coding experience. I think he's got the economics and sort of a lot of that kind of experience. I think a lot of some of the coincidences throw me towards him. So like Dorian Nakamoto was like almost his neighbor. So he's like looking for a randomized name. You know, they've frozen his brain. I mean, they consider him so important, or, you know, and at this point, and I think some of the writing when there's emails back and forth. Sometimes I've thought maybe he's trying to throw us off the scent and the trail, you know, but let's turn a little bit to the announcement of Bitcoin V0.1. So he announces, so Satoshi Nakamoto on Friday, January 9th, 2009, writes, announcing the first release of Bitcoin, a new electronic cash system that uses a peer-to-peer network to prevent double spending. It's completely decentralized with no server or central authority. Windows only for now, open source C++ code is included. A few instructions. And he said, if you can keep a node running that accepts incoming connections, you'll be helping the network a lot. Paraphrasing a little bit here, the software is still alpha and experimental. There's no guarantee the system state won't have to be restored at some point if it becomes necessary. Although I've done everything I can to build in extensibility and versioning. There are two ways to send money. If the recipient is online, you can enter their IP address and it'll connect, get a new public key and send the transaction with comments. Total circulation will be 21 million coins. It will be distributed to network nodes when they make blocks, with the amount cut in half every 4 years. First 4 years, 10.5 million coins. Next 4 years, 5.25 million coins. Next 4 years, 2,625,000 coins. Next 4 years, 1,312,500 coins, etc. When that runs out, the system can support transaction fees if needed. It's best based on open market competition, and there will probably always be nodes willing to process transactions for free. Satoshi Nakamoto. A couple of things here I think is really interesting. One, the altruism, the note, sort of noting the potential for altruism in nodes and running or processing transactions for free. And I think just, I think at this point, I'm taking it that transaction fees aren't baked into the protocol yet. And from what I gather, and I wonder what you think about that, because I think there's some back and forth that goes on about whether transaction fees should be included and whether...
Or
maybe it was functionality there for it, but...
Yeah, you could choose. Yeah.
So transaction fees aren't as baked in yet in terms of.
Well, you you had to, if I remember, it's something like more like you choose. You
like could how make much?
It zero. You can choose to zero or some arbitrary number. I can't remember how it is, but yeah, it is interesting to see always. But we have to remember, you know, just like he said before, it's still alpha and experimental. So there, with that mindset, and when he's writing this with that mindset, it's no surprising that he will talk about, people will talk about transaction fees for free and all. I mean, there are people who will be more worried about, concerned. So I want to make those Bitcoin rewards. It's 50 Bitcoin per block. I don't really care. Someone's going to include, he's going to have a zero transaction fees in his payment, all included. But anyway, it doesn't matter much, you know. So at that time, 50 Bitcoin, you know, makes a irrelevant the transaction. But including them is very relevant because there wasn't that many, first of all. And second, right. You want already to show the value of the network is actually to have transactions. So you do. So there was a very knowledgeable, very conceptually, very, it makes sense that Bitcoin miners will accept blocks transaction with zero fees.
Right. Yeah. Very forward thinking, already thinking about maybe rollbacks and restoration and versioning and extensibility. And I want to turn to now, I guess we're about, before we turn to February 11th on page 99. So at this point though, Bitcoin has been running for 6 days on January 9th. I think Genesis block is January 3rd. So he's been running it for 6 days. I think even before January 3rd, he was running multiple computers on a test net to test some things out. And now what's interesting on February 11th, and these next two posts I bring together because, and I'll read them first, but on February 11, 2009, he makes another announcement on the P2P Foundation.
Yeah.
I've developed a new open source P2P e-cash system called Bitcoin. It's completely decentralized with no central server or trusted parties. because everything is based on crypto proof of stead of trust. Give it a try or take a look at the screenshots and design paper. The root problem with conventional currency is all the trust that's required to make it work. The central bank must be trusted not to debase the currency, but the history of fiat currencies is full of breaches of that trust. Banks must be trusted to hold our money and transfer it electronically, but they lend it out in waves of credit bubbles with barely a fraction in reserve. We have to trust them with our privacy, trust them not to let identity thieves drain our accounts. Their massive overhead costs make micropayments impossible. A generation ago, multi-user time-sharing computer systems had a similar problem. Before strong encryption, users had to rely on password protection to secure their files. Placing trust in the system administrator to keep their information private, privacy could always be overridden by the admin based on his judgment call, weighing the principles of privacy against other concerns or at the behest of his superiors. Then strong encryption became available to the masses and trust was no longer required. Data could be secured in a way that was physically impossible for others to access, no matter for what reason, no matter how good the excuse, no matter what. It's time we had the same thing for money. With e-currency based on cryptographic proof, without the need to trust a third-party middleman, money can be secure and transactions effortless. One of the fundamental building blocks for such a system is digital signatures. Bitcoin's solution is to use a peer-to-peer network to check for double spending. In a nutshell, the network works like a distributed timestamp server, stamping the first transaction to spend a coin. It takes advantage of the nature of information being easy to spread but hard to stifle. For details on how it works, see the design paper. The result is a distributed system with no single point of failure. Users hold the crypto keys to their own money and transact directly with each other with the help of the P2P network to check for double spending. Satoshi Nakamoto. Here to me, this is a little bit more shilling and selling in the sense that we go from a peer-to-peer network to this is money. And this is cryptographic money, and you can protect it with your own keys. The narratives have changed a little bit. And I'm not sure if it was more a month later, we've gotten to test the system a little bit, and he feels a little bit more comfortable talking about it as money now that the peer-to-peer aspect works. Mm-hmm. I don't know if maybe the story has gotten more chiseled or he's writing to a different crowd or just feels more confident. What do you think?
Yeah, it is interesting to see how the level of confidence, if we can use that word, has changed to be much more stronger, or it feels like that. Yeah, but it is different writing, obviously. Yeah. It is different, and which makes things interesting because there's an evolution on his mindset as well, it seems, for him to write this in a different way than initially. So obviously he's a human guy, and right. And the code was living and was changing and getting improved, and along with that, his confidence of the code as well.
Right.
Funny is that the way he mentioned all those those things about privacy and encryption for mainframes, computers, and all that, you know, definitely he's not a college kid just fresh out of 2008 and with all he knew how things were in the 80s.
I mean, I can't imagine this being a very young person or group of persons. I could imagine maybe if it was a group of people that one or multiple members were younger than others, the breadth of, I think, knowledge of many topics and sort of, I think some of that gets deeper with time too.
Yeah.
Tremendous thing, perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I wonder sometimes, and maybe I'm touching a subject you'll cover later, but I probably had in mind that at some point you'll be exiting. But I wonder if you had an idea when he would be exiting the stage, because you know, the fact that he was undercover basically with a pseudonym it was a matter of time eventually that we would have to make that decision.
Yeah. And so the next post, I don't think we're feeling that directly, but I think it's, we're getting to an inflection point. So there I felt like in that post we just read, he's almost speaking like a CEO or an entrepreneurial CEO. And that's what I meant by shilling kind of selling. Okay. He's explaining the product. He's marketing the project. He's the leader of the project. And we fast forward quite a bit now to, we're on page 149 and we're jumping to February 24th, 2010. And here he's writing back, there's discussions around, you know, a new icon or logo, which to me was kind of funny. And again, it makes me think like, you know, he's wearing multiple hats now, he's doing everything. And even the logo is on his mind. And, you know, I mean, there's still so much code to be written. As you know, he doesn't even finish everything before he goes that he intends to finish. And he's got and we'll get into that in a minute. But so he writes here on February 24th, 2010, good suggestion. I made the B slightly lighter and the background slightly darker, very slightly. The foreground is now exactly the same color as the BC in the old one. It's kind of okay if you can't easily read the B in the 16 by 16. At that size, you just need to see that it's a coin. It doesn't matter so much what's embossed on it, just that there be some detail there, because it wouldn't look like a coin if it was a blank, smooth circle. It's slightly wider than tall because the dark perspective under it goes more to the right than down. I finished and posted the 32 by 31 and 48 by 47 versions in the first message. I liked the 48 a lot. How does everyone feel about the B symbol with the two lines through the outside? Can we live with that as our logo? I mean, he's really trying to be the benevolent CEO or leader. And I don't think he, at this point, I think like, he's like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. Like this aspect of it, maybe. What I also find interesting is this just shows more how wide versed he is and just very different things. I mean, the dark perspective, the photography, you know, the lighting. Yeah. And so what do you think of this particular post and that he's discussing this topic with the group?
I found it interesting that there was a discussion of logo as well. You know, it's like, okay, I found it funny. It's just weird that he's discovered of the logo. But indeed, you raise a good point that he's wearing multiple hats and covering about the why. Focusing on the logo, and at that time, and we're talking about, a year after it went out. So I guess after a year, I guess it makes sense that he's starting to look into, okay, adoption kind of, and starting to, you know,
right.
And whatever will be easier to, for the software itself, for everything, for whenever the icon on the computer, when you launch it, and everything had to be. So it was part of the creation of the software. You came up with something that looks like a marketing aspect, but it's part of the software design. You need to have some sort of a logo or a design for an icon on the software itself that attached to the software. But it spins into, another angle that sounds marketing.
Definitely more the marketing side of things, but he's really on every detail. Do you think Satoshi, you know, expected such huge success so rapidly?
It's difficult to say. we know that when we're coming to his last post, where he's basically starting to see that the WikiLeaks stuff and the revelation should them now, that scare him off. I think that's one of the trigger for why it's okay, this is a time to take off. It's starting to, WikiLeaks, he knew that was not something that the government liked at all. Now, if there was a connection, and the fact that he was the central point still. And that's the point I want to make. I mean, the best gift that he's done for Bitcoin, and one of the best, is actually leaving, which actually decentralized the ownership of Bitcoin. because now you're not saying, oh, that guy who created Bitcoin, he's still around. He's the one who owns it. He owns the code. And you know, you can't say that. Nobody can. Now, as nobody knows who he is, so he's maybe not even alive or whatever that is. So really, it's decentralized ownership. And that's a key element of the whole overall picture. And if he thought about that, that's another amazing shot, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we're sort of running out of time with Satoshi. But turning to page like 159, mm-hmm. on June 17, 2010, And Gavin's now in the picture. Gavin and uh-huh. is it Andreessen? Yeah.
Andreessen.
So Gavin is now messing around writing a little tool that dissects the Bitcoin wallet, mainly because he wants to understand better exactly how Bitcoin works. And he notices that there's and I see that the outputs of transactions have a value and a bunch of bytes that are run through the little fourth-like scripting language built into Bitcoin. First, it makes me a little nervous that Bitcoin has a scripting language in it, even though it is a really simple scripting language. It makes me nervous because it is more complicated, and complication is the enemy of security. It also makes it harder to create a second compatible implementation, but I think I can get over that. Could I write code to create transactions with any valid script in the transaction out? And is flexibility in the types of coins created the reason it is coded this way? So I thought this was one of Satoshi's most interesting responses. The nature of Bitcoin is such that once version 0.1 was released, the core design was set in stone for the rest of its lifetime. Because of that, I wanted to design it to support every possible transaction type I could think of. The problem was each thing required special support code and data fields, whether it was used or not, and only covered one special case at a time. It would have been an explosion of special cases. The solution was script, which generalizes the problem so transacting parties can describe their transaction as a predicate that the node network evaluates. The nodes only need to understand the transaction to the extent of evaluating whether the sender's conditions are met. The script is actually a predicate. It's just an equation that evaluates to true or false. Predicate is a long and unfamiliar word, so I called it a script. I thought this back and forth was very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's all about, it goes a little bit into the concept of how much changes to, I mean, if you look at Bitcoin Cash, for them, is the only thing that could be changed was the block size. And while you've got SegWit, where instead, they went into a different direction where actually you just reorganized the structure, and where it's still relevant, you just handle the soft work instead. But it goes with the concept of you wanted to have it at, there's the changes are more, it seems to be like it's a soft work oriented mindset that he had more than a hard work.
Yeah. It also makes me, it's just interesting. At first, I think it's like an honest question by Gavin. But, you know, within the same discourse, he's already looking to make another sort of Bitcoin, it seems like, or an implementation, whether it's compatible or not. And then in further along in Satoshi's response, he says the design supports a tremendous variety of possible transaction types that I designed years ago. Escrow transactions, bonded contracts, third-party arbitration, multi-party signature, etc. If Bitcoin catches on in a big way, these are things we'll want to explore in the future. Mm-hmm. But they all had to be designed at the beginning to make sure they would be possible later. Uh-huh. I don't believe a second compatible implementation of Bitcoin will ever be a good idea. So much of the design depends on all nodes getting exactly identical results in lockstep that a second implementation would be a menace to the network. Mm-hmm. So I think it was also very, to me, it's astounding that everything was baked into the core design.
Yeah.
We can get into how good of a coder Satoshi was, but to accomplish that at first go speaks volumes about design, framework, vision, and execution. Mm-hmm. To think through all these different things that we could then build onto it later. And yeah, I just think that was, you know, and then to start talking about a second compatible version, I thought was really interesting. I think that, and I love the back and forth where he's like, dude, it's not a script. It's actually a predicate. And it's not as, you know, nefarious as you think. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to say. So what I thought was really interesting there is that he says he's been working on this, you know, these transaction types or possibilities for years.
Yes. Yeah.
It's another thing that made me think Hal or maybe Nick or, you know, why die, right? You know, those typical players. And then responding to Laszlo on the same day, he says, since 2007, at some point I became convinced there was a way to do this without any trust required at all and couldn't resist to keep thinking about it. Much more of the work was designing than coding. Fortunately, so far, all the issues raised have been things I previously considered and planned for. Mm. Very powerful stuff. It's very interesting. Another post from Gavin. He's going to start the Bitcoin faucet.
Yep.
So she's like, great choice. I was going to do that as well.
Five Bitcoin, why not?
Five Bitcoin, and then some jerk from Spain is draining the faucet.
Yes.
You know. Yeah,
What is funny is that already five Bitcoin was back when it was $10 when I started reading those, and when it was $100 already when I was writing and driving all those data and reading this stuff. It's like, my gosh, it's $500, you know, that will be a faucet distributing $500, you know. That will be quite a day. I mean, obviously, back then, it was cents, you know.
Yep. And, you know, maybe a couple of weeks later on July 9, 2010, someone asked them about cornering the market. And I'd love to hear maybe... Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, you know, they're asking whether someone could corner the market on Bitcoin and for whatever purposes that wouldn't be good for Bitcoin. But maybe you could talk a little bit about the Hunt brothers and cornering the market maybe saw there.
Yeah. So my perspective on that is that actually the Hunt brothers, they only had a very, very tiny fraction of the silver investment. So they were not really the only one responsible for the rise of the silver market and then pushing it up the price. I mean, they were one of the major participants, obviously, but the general market too. I mean, people were lining up to buy the silver at that time. It was really a hockey stick, you know, because gold went up and then people said, gosh, it's too expensive. I'm going to go into that silver. And it's always a typical case, you know, and it's what's going to happen again. But yeah, that, and so I read it from even from Mike Maloney somewhere. He wrote something where he was depicting how much in terms of percentage, and it's not significant with the Hunt brothers, but they were a perfect scapegoat for blaming, and they changed the rule in the futures market. They were only selling, that was you couldn't buy a futures market. They really wanted the price to crash. So if the only thing you could do is sell on the contract, so they couldn't be, you know, buying. And so that means existing, the only buyers will be those closing their short position, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting story as well. Then, you know, maybe a few days later, the Wikipedia article, I guess, is deleted on Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and again, I mean... Satoshi's really getting into the weeds on this.
It's
how do we get it back up? What do we got to do to appease Wikipedia?
Well, we know it's very political. Wikipedia is influenced by big donors, including bankers. So yeah, we're not surprised when I read that. It was in the past for me as well. But it's like, wow, okay, they are okay. What do we do? They were already. It just shows the thing. The banks, and they were aware of Bitcoin right in the beginning, and yeah. So now it's starting to kick off. You know, oops, maybe it was what page is that?
Oh, that was on 183.
Okay, So I'm not sure what time was what date 183. Okay.
Oh,
July 2010. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it was they could see that was actually a price starting to show up for Bitcoin. It was not free anymore. There was a price attached to it, and suddenly that meant something significance. And okay. So all right. So what we can do is yank up the Wikipedia page so that to slow down the adoption,
That's so interesting.
But
all the different tactics around that, and the reason they cited the reason for taking it down. But that dialogue around just the deletion of the article went on for a few months, a little bit back and forth, I think all the way through September 30th. Moving on a little bit, at the same time as that, July 29th, a major flaw was discovered.
Oh, yes.
In the protocol.
Yeah.
As Satoshi writes, please upgrade to 0.3.6 ASAP. We fixed an implementation bug where it was possible that bogus transactions could be displayed as accepted. Mm-hmm. Do not accept Bitcoin transactions as payment until you upgrade to 0.3.6.
Yeah.
If you can't upgrade right away, just shut down your Bitcoin node until you do. Also, in this, 0.3.6 upgrade, faster hashing, and a few other, features, which I thought was interesting that they had time to get the features in.
Well, they probably had that in the block, in the code already, and they were ready to assemble a little bit more features before release, but then they had to push it up.
Yeah, and I think there were some, I'm not sure if they had to do a rollback around this time to deal with some of the fallout from that.
I can't remember if that's, I don't remember that. I think there was, because they, if I remember.
I do think they had a rollback.
There was a fake transaction, so they had to. But imagine what would have price of Bitcoin if that happened today. I mean, obviously, we're talking in the very first, it's running for a year and a half, and it's only then that was discovered. major flaws like that, after beyond 2 years, they were gone pretty much, but it shows you, it's just funny.
Yeah.
We know it's very unlikely to see something like that because it's been going on for too long.
Yeah, and the system was very much more fragile then, as evidenced by those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Fast forward to August 22nd, 2010, on page 271, Satoshi makes another post. He's been working on writing the alert system. And he wants to, figure out a way to let everyone know that there's an issue, whether it's, he would do an alert message that was only signed with a private key that he only had.
Mm-hmm.
And nodes could do two things in response to that alert. They could put a warning message on the status bar or make the money handling methods of the JSON RPC interface return an error. Mm-hmm. And this, really sparks a really interesting debate between mostly, I think, him and Gavin, or actually some other people, just about, how much power does he have here? if you want to comment on that.
It shows that the power was more about the alert messaging and the release of code, but to that extent, that's it. And I think by going away, he relinquished that power. And now, there's that kind of thing would be only useful and accepted for Bitcoin miners to get anything informational, but for the functioning of the protocol itself, the Bitcoin, nothing will change and nobody's going to have any control over that. And that's a big difference. But it seems like there was some sort of power form, but it's mitigated by the fact it's just an alert system. So I'm not too worried about it.
I get what you're saying. One of his responses was, if you're so paranoid that you're getting hysterical over this, then surely you're paranoid enough that a warning message that if a warning message displays on the status bar, you'll check the website and forum. I think if another bug like the overflow bug occurs, it's important that automated websites stop trading until their admins can check out what's going on and decide what to do. Mm-hmm. If you decide it's a false alarm and want to take your chances, you can use the disable safe mode switch. Mm-hmm. I kind of really understand what's going on here because I do get the questioning. And I think at this point, my feeling is that he understands where the questioning is from, but he's trying to explain that he doesn't have any real power here. Mm-hmm. And he's just an alert system. You can, turn off the alert. But that prompts some questions from, I think it's Jimbo Way. Mm-hmm. And he says a few rhetorical questions for Satoshi. Can you resist waterboarding? Can you endure electric shock? All forms of torture? Lastly, are you Jack Bauer by any chance? Seriously. I think somewhere during this, back and forth, I think he gets that he can't sustain this position. Uh-huh. He noted about a second before this, someday when we haven't found that any new bugs for a long time, and it has been thoroughly security reviewed without finding anything, this can be scaled back. Yeah. I'm not arguing that this is the permanent way of things forever. It's still beta software. I mean, to me, it seems like he's maybe thinking longer term before he has to exit, but he's thinking exit already.
It is just an alarm system, and he understood that it was still somewhat of a beta system in the beginning, and it was starting to be. I mean, pretty much all the tough bugs were gone by the time he left. So it was just some minor stuff after that. There was nothing.
Well, it was still, time is really shrinking with Satoshi here in public life. On August 27th, on page 284, he posts Bitcoins. This is in response to a conversation around what is Bitcoin kind of and where does value come from. But Bitcoins have no dividend or potential future dividend. Therefore, not like a stock, more like a collectible or commodity. I guess at this point, like even in 2014, how are you thinking about Bitcoin? You know, as money, as a savings technology, or, I think this is really prophetic words by Satoshi in a lot of ways. It's very simple and he just ends the argument very clearly and succinctly.
Yeah, it is funny that he's got this angle. You would ask that to a Bitcoiner on Twitter. It's not a collectible or a commodity. What are you talking about? It's money, or it's digital gold. It's money, and not using the term just collectible, which sounds more like an NFT than a cryptocurrency in Bitcoin. So it is. It's a real different twist than the rest. I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah. But in late 2010, WikiLeaks wanted to use Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And we're on page 310. And I found this really interesting. I think he mentions his real name, but R. Horning on December 4th, 2010. He's kind of like, for myself, I'm getting to the point to say, bring it on in regards to WikiLeaks. Mm-hmm. Note that I'm using my real name here instead of a pseudonym. And I'm willing to personally say, bring it on in terms of being associated with Bitcoins as a project. I've had police come into my house without my permission already and do all kinds of stupid stuff. So for me, that line being crossed has already happened. Mm-hmm. I am also connected to enough people politically that if something was to happen to me, that it would be noted and things would happen too. It is the morally correct thing to be supporting WikiLeaks. And if they'll take a few of my Bitcoins, I not only want to donate, but to let the world know that they can donate to WikiLeaks through Bitcoins as well. I mean, the fact that he's like, I'm willing to use my real name. People have already, police have come into his home. And it sounds like it might be related to Bitcoin, but he's not clear about that. Mm-hmm. He's extremely politically connected. Skipping ahead a little bit. The only possible concern I would have is over how sound the protocol itself is right now. If anything, a major flux of new people into Bitcoins would help there too. And the worst that could happen is that Bitcoins itself would be broken in some way, where a new cryptocurrency would have to be created, fixing the problems of Bitcoin. It is the idea of cryptocurrency that would then persist, and it is incredibly hard to censor an idea. Basically, bring it on. Let's encourage WikiLeaks to use Bitcoins, and I'm willing to face any risk or fallout from that act. Robert S. Horning, Logan, Utah. I feel like I'm doxing him. December 5th, 2010, Satoshi writes back, no, don't bring it on. The project needs to grow gradually so the software can be strengthened along the way. I make this appeal to WikiLeaks not to try to use Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a small beta community in its infancy. You would not stand to get more than pocket change, and the heat you would bring would likely destroy us at this stage.
Yeah. You know, the argument that many have heard is like, if I think the cat is out of the bag, and that in terms of Bitcoin today, and they can't censor it or whatever because it's too big, their window of time was in the early stage. And it seems like Satoshi recognized that as that in that early phase, there was a potential for censoring or attacking them or closing up and going on the forum and whatever, you know, attacking anyone connecting with those forum, you know. So it's funny to see that it fits with, I think it's the prior CEO of Overstock who made that comment, that it's too big. Their window of time is gone, and they're, but at that time, it's probably not, you know.
Yeah. The next day, PC World posted an article on December 11th, or maybe it was December 10th. Could the WikiLeaks scandal lead to new virtual currency? Posted by Satoshi, December 11th, 2010. It would have been nice to get this attention in any other context. Mm-hmm. WikiLeaks has kicked the hornet's nest, and the swarm is headed towards us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, this is getting, you know, more foreboding.
Yeah.
Sort of where...
And that's his last post that is not related to release. The next one is the release, and that's it. Yeah.
Yep. So I'll read that one, December 12, 2010. 19 hours after the hornet's nest post, Satoshi writes his last forum post before retreating from public life. There's more work to do on DOS, but I'm doing a quick build of what I have so far in case it's needed before venturing into more complex ideas. The build for this version is 0.3.19. Added some DOS controls. As Gavin and I have said clearly before, the software is not at all resistant to DOS attack. This one, improvement, but there are still more ways to attack than I can count. I'm leaving the limit-free relay part as a switch for now, and it's there if you need it. Additional bullet points. Removed safe mode alerts. Ding, ding,
it's
ding.
It's there if you need it. That's if he's already passing the baton.
Yeah, and what is that limit-free relay part then? For switch as a switch for now, and it's what is there if you need it, I guess. What would that provide?
Well, I mean, it's in the code, you know, it could be turned on and off in the code. So, and the next release, okay, it's an R. I mean, or miners,
right?
Manually for themselves. The thing is that I want to bring up is that, and it's there if you need it, you know.
Right. It's like that's beautiful in a way. So we remove safe mode alerts. Safe mode alerts was a temporary measure after the 0.3.9 overflow bug. We can say all we want that users can just run with disable safe mode, but it's better just not to have it for the sake of appearances. It was never intended as a long-term feature. Safe mode can still be triggered by seeing a longer, greater total proof of work in valid blockchain. As of March 14, 2014, this is Satoshi's last post on P2P Foundation. On Friday, March 7, 2014, he wrote, "I am not Dorian Nakamoto." And this was in reaction to a magazine's publication that claimed to have identified Bitcoin Satoshi Nakamoto as a man living in California with the name of Dorian Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yeah,
I mean, very interesting to me that he removed the safe mode. I feel like that was like, I have to get this done before I leave. There's no way I can leave without doing that.
It's there if we need it. He said it's there if you need it.
Yeah. but he removed it before he left.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was very interesting. What was it like, you know, or who was, you know, I mean, there were many people instrumental in putting this book together. Dustin and Gavin and sort of how did that come together and what was it like working with them on
this? Well, most I send them an email and ask them to send me all the private information, the conversation they had. Gavin, he said that he had been asked by multiple people, including people in the media, and he always returned them with only a subset of all the conversation he had, because I'm not going to exchange information, that private information that I had, with somebody else unless I can have the agreement with the other person, where he cannot anymore. So that's why it was just a subset. And so that was mostly the main goal, was to obtain whatever private conversation that was also with those people.
Yeah. I mean, Dustin's a really interesting character, person in the story. I mean, he was super interested from the beginning, and sort of receptive.
Yeah, sharp question. Yeah.
Yep. And I have two more pieces I want to cover.
Yeah.
So the last private correspondence. Now, I like how you wrote this. Allegedly, Gavin Andreasen is the last person to have had a private exchange with Satoshi Nakamoto. It took place 4 months after his final December 2010 forum post on Bitcointalk.org. Gavin Andreasen had few private email exchanges with Toshi after his retreat from public life. However, Gavin has decided that only the very last email from Satoshi will be shared publicly. So I'll read that. First, I'll read Satoshi's response. On Tuesday, April 26, 2011, Satoshi wrote, "I wish you wouldn't keep talking about me as a mysterious, shadowy figure. The press just turns that into a pirate currency angle. Maybe instead make it about the open source project and give more credit to your dev contributors. It helps motivate them." And in response, Gavin wrote, "You must have read the Forbes article. Yeah, I'm not happy with the wacky pirate money tone either. More credit for the rest of the contributors is a very good idea. On a completely different subject, I did something that I hope turns out to be smart, but might be stupid. I was contacted by IQT.org. They're a US government-funded strategic investment company. And part of what they do is holding an annual conference on emerging technologies for US intelligence agencies. This year, the theme is mobility of money. They asked if I'd be willing to talk about Bitcoin, and I committed to giving a 50-minute presentation and participating in a panel discussion. I hope that by talking directly to them, in quotes, and more importantly, listening to their questions, concerns, they will think of Bitcoin the way I do, as a just, plain, better, more efficient, less subject to political whims money, not as an all-powerful black market tool that will be used by anarchists to overthrow the system. It might be really stupid if it just raises Bitcoin's visibility on their radar, but I think it is way too late for that. Bitcoin is already on their radar. I plan on posting about this on the forum soon, because Gavin secretly visits the CIA would spin all sorts of conspiracy theories. Gavin openly visits the CIA will create enough conspiracy theories as it is."
Which it did.
Yeah. What do you think of this exchange? I'll go further. I mean, the fact that he would only share one of the last few emails and only the last one.
Yeah, well, I didn't try to second guess exactly and to understand exactly why only this exchange, and but it's obviously, I'm guessing that the other ones might have been, this one is more related to, okay, public image and so on. I mean, he's targeting about himself, you know. I wish they wouldn't talk about myself. So to make that public, and I emphasize that everybody should not be talking about Satoshi or trying to find out who he is, that kind of thing, is it seems to be the reasoning for Gavin to publish it, that one specifically. While the other one, he felt like it was an invasion of privacy not to be sharing. So I think that's the general mindset that Gavin might have had.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hold Gavin in very strong esteem anymore.
Yeah, because of Bitcoin Cash and all that.
Yeah, and I think that's just really the cherry on the ice cream sundae at that point. I mean, he's basically saying like, yeah, I portrayed this thing poorly, or they portrayed me poorly. He keeps talking about like this might be dumb or stupid. Like he knows he's not doing the right thing. In a way, he keeps apologizing. He's trying to seed and change narratives, trying to say what Bitcoin is or isn't, or how to frame it for them. You know,
I think for personally, I would not. If I had been in that position, I would not. I mean, there's no point in the sense.
There's
that,
no point. And it sounds like they
are. Yeah. Bitcoin is the enemy of the government, yep. as it is. I mean, it's only once it grows super big that they can't fight it. And we're at that point right now where it's suddenly too big for them to tackle front end. There's too many people involved. And the one thing that I like the most about Bitcoin is how much the education that had changed, how many people have understood sound money, Austrian School of Economy. I mean, that's the most beneficial element of Bitcoin was the education aspect of it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the only releasing the last article, the last email feels a little bit like lying by omission. You know, and it's just, I mean, at this point, I mean, Satoshi's kind of angry here, or angry, in my opinion. And he's even giving him CEO advice on how to motivate the devs.
We don't know if there was a prior exchange that led to this.
Right.
You know, for him to write this, what was before, we don't know.
Yeah, and that's what kind of, but like he's like, I still have to give you advice on how to motivate the devs. Like, you know, you're my, that's you know, my COO, and I'm not happy with you, but get the job done and talk about it the right way, you know? And then, you know, this is what, that's a response. And what we read from Gavin was response. And so that was, you know, allegedly the last private correspondence of Satoshi. I would love to read this piece.
Yeah.
I'll add one piece to it. From Hal.
Yes.
You know, and since you're right, since he was the first recipient of the very first Bitcoin transaction, someone who was involved early.
I found it important to.
Yeah. So on March 19th, because at this point, you know, I'm still thinking it's Hal. And he's still alive. He's answered the Dorian question. He fills a lot of the marks for me. And this, you know, we'll get into it. So I thought I'd write about the last 4 years, an eventful time for Bitcoin and me. I mean, he's already defined his life around Bitcoin, basically, here. For those who don't know me, I'm Hal Finney. I got my start in crypto, working on an early version of PGP, working closely with Phil Zimmerman. When Phil decided to start PGP Corporation, I was one of the first hires. I would work on PGP until my retirement. At the same time, I got involved with the Cypherpunks. I ran the first cryptographically based anonymous remailer, among other activities. Fast forward to late 2008 and the announcement of Bitcoin. I've noticed that cryptographic graybeards, I was in my mid-50s, tend to get cynical. I was more idealistic. I have always loved crypto, the mystery and the paradox of it. When Satoshi announced Bitcoin on the cryptography mailing list, he got a skeptical reception at best. Cryptographers have seen too many grand schemes by clueless noobs. They tend to have a knee-jerk reaction. I was more positive. I had long been interested in cryptographic payment schemes. Plus, I was lucky enough to meet and extensively correspond with both Wai Dai and Nick Szabo, generally acknowledged to have created ideas that would be realized with Bitcoin. I had made an attempt to create my own proof-of-work-based currency called RPOW, so I found Bitcoin fascinating. When Satoshi announced the first release of the software, I grabbed it right away. I think I was the first person besides Satoshi to run Bitcoin. I mined block 70-something, and I was the recipient of the first Bitcoin transaction. When Satoshi sent 10 coins to me as a test, I carried on an email conversation with Satoshi over the next few days, mostly me reporting bugs and him fixing them. Today, Satoshi's true identity has become a mystery. But at the time, I thought I was dealing with a young man of Japanese ancestry who was very smart and sincere. I've had the good fortune to know many brilliant people over the course of my life, so I recognized the signs. After a few days, Bitcoin was running pretty stably, so I left it running. Those were the days when difficulty was one, and you could find blocks with a CPU, not even a GPU. I mined several blocks over the next days, but I turned it off because it made my computer run hot, and the fan noise bothered me. In retrospect, I wish I had kept it up longer, but on the other hand, I was extraordinarily lucky to be there at the beginning. It's one of those glass half full, half empty things. The next I heard of Bitcoin was late 2010, when I was surprised to find that it was not only still going, Bitcoins actually had monetary value. I dusted off my old wallet and was relieved to discover that my Bitcoins were still there. As the price climbed up to real money, I transferred the coins into an offline wallet, where hopefully they'll be worth something to my heirs. Speaking of heirs, I got a surprise in 2009 when I was suddenly diagnosed with a fatal disease. I was in the best shape of my life at the start of that year. I'd lost a lot of weight and taken up distance running. I'd run several half marathons and I was starting to train for a full marathon. I worked my way up to 20 plus miles and I thought I was all set. That's when everything went wrong. My body began to fail. I slurred my speech, lost strength in my hands, and my legs were slow to recover. In August 2009, I was given the diagnosis of ALS, also called Lou Gehrig's disease, after the famous baseball player who got it. ALS is a disease that kills motor neurons, which carry signals from the brain to the muscles. It causes first weakness, then gradually increasing paralysis. It is usually fatal in 2 to 5 years. My symptoms were mild at first, and I continued to work, but fatigue and voice problems forced me to retire in early 2011. Since then, the disease has continued its inexorable progression. Today, I am essentially paralyzed. I am fed through a tube, and my breathing is assisted through another tube. I operate the computer using a commercial eye tracker system. It also has a speech synthesizer, so this is my voice now. I spend all day in my power wheelchair. I worked up an interface using an Arduino so that I can adjust my wheelchair's position using my eyes. It has been an adjustment, but my life is not too bad. I can still read, listen to music, and watch TV and movies. I recently discovered that I can even write code. It's very slow, probably 50 times slower than I was before, but I still love programming and it gives me goals. Currently, I'm working on something Mike Hearn suggested, using the security features of modern processors designed to support trusted computing to harden Bitcoin wallets. It's almost ready to release. I just have to do the documentation. And of course, the price gyrations of Bitcoins are entertaining to me. I have skin in the game, but I came by my Bitcoins through luck with little credit to me. I lived through the crash of 2011, so I've seen it before. Easy come, easy go. That's my story. I'm pretty lucky overall. Even with the ALS, my life is very satisfying, but my life expectancy is limited. Those discussions about inheriting your Bitcoins are of more than academic interest. My Bitcoins are stored in our safe deposit box, and my son and daughter are tech savvy. I think they're safe enough. I'm comfortable with my legacy. Hal Finney. I mean, at this point, I still think it's Hal. Follow that storyline, and I changed my opinion a little bit, or I'm undecided, but, you know, Hal's still alive here, and he's talking about, at this point, you know, Bitcoin and the, you know, the building of it and the heroes that kind of Bitcoin is built on the shoulders of, and he's talking about how he slowed down in 2011. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's getting a little bit less done, but he's still able to do all these things that, you know, are kind of feel like uniquely built for him in a way. So it seems like he's winding the project down and handing it off. And he's trying to, in my mind, almost, you know, take a little credit or tip his hat a little bit. I mean, it seems like Bitcoin is the summation of his life in that post. Mm. What did you make?
I never tried to too much to extrapolate about who is Bitcoin Satoshi Nakamoto, because I mean, all possibilities are there. It could be anybody else that has managed to stay on the radar. It could be Hal Finney. It could be many of the others at the Cyberpunk. It is, there are multiple candidates, but I understand that in terms of timing for Hal Finney, it might sound like, maybe it'll explain why. But on the other hand, if the timing of moving away for the Satoshi was in there on the first day because he used a pseudonym rather than his real name, then it didn't matter who it was. You know?
Yeah. But, you know, Satoshi pops up one more time.
Yeah.
And if this is valid, you know, I don't think it could be Hal. I don't know how Hal would pass this message on for someone to do this for him.
Yeah.
So the last time Satoshi broke his silence was about 16 months later. We have another post using an email address that is known to have been used by Satoshi in the past. Yeah. And he felt so disappointed enough about this particular situation that he published another post to express his view against a fork that was being promoted by Gavin Andreessen, among others, Bitcoin XT. On Saturday, August 15, 2015, after the Book of Satoshi has even come out, I have been following the recent block size debates through the mailing list. I had hoped the debate would resolve and that a fork proposal would achieve widespread consensus. However, with the formal release of Bitcoin XT 0.11a, this looks unlikely to happen. And so I am forced to share my concerns about this very dangerous fork. The developers of this pretender Bitcoin claim to be following my original vision, but nothing could be further from the truth. When I designed Bitcoin, I designed it in such a way as to make future modifications to the consensus rules difficult without near unanimous agreement. Bitcoin was designed to be protected from the influence of charismatic leaders, even if their name is Gavin Andreessen, Barack Obama, or Satoshi Nakamoto. Nearly everyone has to agree on a change, and they have to do it without being forced or pressured into it. By doing a fork in this way, these developers are violating the original vision they claim to honor. They use my old writings to make claims about what Bitcoin was supposed to be. However, I acknowledge that a lot has changed since that time, and new knowledge has been gained that contradicts some of my early opinions. For example, I didn't anticipate pooled mining and its effect on the security of the network. Making Bitcoin a competitive monetary system while also preserving its security properties is not a trivial problem, and we should take more time to come up with a robust solution. I suspect we need a better incentive for users to run nodes instead of relying solely on altruism. If two developers can fork Bitcoin and succeed in redefining what Bitcoin is in the face of widespread technical criticism and through the use of populist tactics, I will have no choice but to declare Bitcoin a failed project. Bitcoin was meant to be both technically and socially robust. This present situation has been very disappointing to watch unfold. Wow. I mean, those are some strong words.
I remember when that popped out, the camp, the Bitcoin XT camp were saying, it's fake, it's not really Satoshi. That was the claim. And now obviously I couldn't include that. I mean, the book was already released, but it was the first time there was a controversy about the identity of Satoshi Nakamoto. Or is this person using this email? I mean, it's still, we don't know who wrote this piece, but it was already a controversy about who, if it's really Satoshi Nakamoto. And right now, I mean, since then, it's only gross. Anybody who comes up today and claims he is Satoshi Nakamoto, even if he used that email thing, everybody will be skeptical The only thing that just like this guy in the Australian guy, Mr. Wrong.
Yeah.
And the thing is that there's no way that you can prove it unless you show private key kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
With that you own the private key at this point. Because on anything else, it's like, well, okay. And email, the email and the password, it could, but you know, the whatever the system behind, they could have altered the password behind, because it's a centralized system, those email system, you know.
Yeah. This post to me was fascinating. It almost feels like he's rising from the dead. It's a weird thing to say, but he's like, I'm back, bitches. And you're wrong.
It was really funny to see this.
Yeah. I mean, this is crazy. He refers to his original, almost like his original scriptures and writings, mm-hmm. but he's key to clear to say like, they're not set in stone and I might've been mm-hmm. wrong and I was infallible. Mm-hmm. And he's almost saying there are no disciples. Mm-hmm. There are no second leaders.
Yeah,
I'm not a leader. Don't become a disciple. Uh-huh. Don't refer to my writings.
Yeah.
Don't refer to them wrong is almost what he's saying. Yeah. You can refer to them. You should refer to them, but don't refer to them wrong.
Yeah.
And it almost to me like threatens the ability to come back and do this again if needed, you know, because at this point, you know, I'm thinking if it's not, you know, because Hal also fit the picture of like, well, if he's not speaking for so long and he's able to maintain such real life internet privacy from state actors or, you know, any of the conventions that he's going after with this system, which I think is near impossible, is almost like an immaculate thing, then I almost presumed he was dead either from nefarious causes or natural causes. You know, Hal died naturally, so that kind of fit the scenario there. You know, but this is like he's I can come back and settle disputes if I need to, guys. And he's still around in 2015. Phil, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the conversation. The book was astounding, really was excellent. You know,
well, thank you.
I'm glad it's in my possession. You can see it's all marked up, you know, and I'm not even sure we got to all of those things. I really appreciate, you know, the effort and time you put into doing this, the foresight, and then coming on and talking about it. I hope we covered everything. If not, you know, the floor is yours, and please let everyone know where they could find you and the book.
Well, they can find me at, well, my website is wreninvestment.com, W-R-E-N investment.com. And the my Twitter account is egg_thescrambler. Long story short, I could go on to why it's that. So EGG_thescrambler on Twitter. And that's pretty much how people can reach me.
And you get the book on Amazon. I'm sure everywhere books are sold. Book is fantastic. Well, and I think it is a piece of history and a future history book. Mm-hmm. It's already a history book. What's with Egg Scrambler?
My background is electrical engineering. And there was, in the late 80s, the cable companies, they were using analog system to scramble the signals, the video signals of pay channel. And the audio was clear. It's just the video signals that would scramble. And so you had to have that box that will be descrambling it so that have it proper. And there was a printout. There was some that was printed out from a magazine of a descrambler, basically. And all the wiring, the resistance, capacitors, and all that to create your own and then set it up on your computer. All right, I can watch something that is, I don't have to pay for it. But just for fun of it, I just put egg in front of the printout, you know, egg in front of the scrambler, and people started laughing. And then it started. When I needed a username, that memory came up. So I picked that up.
That's great. That's awesome. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this. Like I said before, I mean, getting to, you know, it's like you're almost getting to read. It's like almost like an autobiography. Of Satoshi.
Yes, that's the only thing that we have about him. And like I said, if he was still today, and even if he was giving speaking in front of TV or YouTube channels and all that, that book would not have been written. There would be no point for it. It's really because of this this important aspect of, you know, it's only a window of time that we have of them. And
Yeah, awesome, man. This has been so dope.
It's a religion for geeks.
Yeah, it's almost like a biblical piece. Thank you so much, Phil.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Cedric.
Phil Champagne on the Book of Satoshi, the collected writings of Satoshi Nakamoto, right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And this episode was brought to you by Citadel Cabins, CypherSafe, Ledin, and the Bitcoin 2022 conference. Ledin.io is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. If you want to see what it's all about and get $50 free in USDC when you take out your first Ledin loan, head over to start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. You bought a hardware wallet, right? So you take your Bitcoin security seriously. Now go that extra step and secure it from physical disaster with a CypherWheel seed storage device. Go to CypherSafe.io, use the code MATRIX for 10% off your order to keep your sats safe. Citadel Cabins exists to help individuals achieve shelter, rest, security, and location independence. Head over to CitadelCabins.com to fill out an application now. Bitcoin 2022 will be held on Miami Beach from April 6th to 9th of next year. And you could use the code BITCOINMATRIX at checkout to get 10% off your tickets. And thank you for listening. Stack sats, stay humble, and I'll see you in the Bitcoin Matrix. This is Cedric. Peace.